ICMA University is pleased to present this online program entitled Fiscal and Organizational Strategies During a Pandemic. We are very pleased to welcome all of you to this presentation. I'd like to draw everyone's attention to the links box located on the left of the screen. This area contains links to handouts and resources related to today's program. When you click on a link, a separate web browser window or tab will open so that you can view, save, or print. The webinar evaluation link is also in this area, and you must be logged into ICMA University to access the survey from here. But you can also find it on your dashboard after today's program by clicking on the program title. It is my pleasure to introduce today's presenters, Nina Vetter, Jim Mann, Austin Good, and Kenny Downing. Nina Vetter is the Pueblo West Metro District Manager for the community of Pueblo West, Colorado. She has worked in local and federal government for over 10 years, following several years in the private sector. She currently serves on the Colorado Smart Cities Alliance Board and is the Vice President of Colorado Women Leading Government. She has a Master's in Public Administration and a Bachelor's in Business Administration. Jim Mann is a senior municipal advisor and principal at Ehlers Public Finance Advisors, where he assists local governments, public utilities, school districts, and special districts design and implement financial solutions. Prior to joining Ehlers in 2000, he had 11 years of local government experience, including 7 years at the Village Administrator for the Village of Slinger, Wisconsin. Jim holds a Master's in Public Administration from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and a Bachelor's degree in Public Administration and Political Science from the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. Austin Good is a problem solver with a love for cities, infrastructure, social change, and sustainability. Currently the assistant to the city manager for the city of Lone Tree, Colorado, Austin is focused on process improvement, community engagement, communications, master planning, and outside agency coordination. He received his master's in public administration from the University of Kansas and bachelor's in landscape architecture from Colorado State University. Kenny Downing is the city administrator for Baraboo, Wisconsin, where she has served since her appointment in December last year. Prior to her arrival in Baraboo, she served as the county manager for Baker County, Florida, in addition to various other roles in local governments in California and Texas. She holds a master's in public administration from California State University at Long Beach and a bachelor's in political science from CSU Polytech at Pomona. Speakers, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Happy to be here. Well, let me just start out. This is Jim Mann with Ehlers. Why are we here? Well, you know, it's hard to believe that a little over 6 months ago, we didn't even really remember what a coronavirus was. And then all of a sudden, we started hearing some reports come out of China in the middle of December that they had some odd pneumonia that was occurring that was spreading rather quickly. It wasn't until January 11th that we had a death in China. It was February that the first death in the United States occurred, and then all things started to change in the country. Most importantly, on March 11th, when WHO declared a pandemic, that started a cascading events where the world basically came to a halt. Sports died. NBA was the first to suspend its season, and that started a cascading series of events where just about every sporting event and activity was canceled in the near term, or it was postponed, or it was suspended. So now we live in a world without sports, and we have all sorts of found time to basically take care of all those projects that we never thought we'd have time to do. By April 1, more than half of the country was on orders to stay at home. Many of those orders are starting to expire. Some states are starting to open back up. There are a few states that have extended their orders. I think Oregon is the state that has the longest standing order, and the last I understood that order went through July 6th. Now, probably one of the worst things that has ever occurred is that we had the beautiful convergence of Taco Tuesday and Cinco de Mayo, mm-hmm. and yet there was nothing open for us to be able to go enjoy that glorious day. It's been a wild ride. The market has been extremely volatile since probably the beginning of March, middle of March, and we've seen that volatility reach levels that, you know, the country hasn't seen since Black Monday in 1987 and the Great Depression. I think one of the key components that we're going to be looking at in future weeks, months, days, is what's going to happen. We have a recently released jobs report that 14.7% unemployment. That eclipses a number that dates back to 1948, although we haven't hit the estimated 25% unemployment that was during the Great Depression. Now, if you count temporary layoffs or furloughs, it's suggested that that would be an additional 5% on the unemployment. So we really could be sitting at around a 20% unemployment right now. There's been about a little over 20 million jobs lost since the start of the pandemic, and it's been really across the board. You've seen job losses from the service industry, consulting services, accounting, law firms, healthcare, and dentists, believe it or not, have shed a lot of employees. It has not been sticking to one class of employment or one type of employee. Although it does seem to impact hourly wage earners more than it does salaried employees, just by virtue of a lot of retail being closed down. In April, the jobless claims, 88% of the people that filed jobless claims said that their loss of job was what they thought was going to be temporary. And then as we kind of lead into where things are going, right now we're looking at a survey that says about 40% of the small businesses out there are going to be skipping their rent in May. So I'm not sure that we have seen the worst of it yet. The key is going to be what's going to be the recovery shape. And I think you've probably heard some commentary of, you know, I think President Trump was hoping for a V-shaped recovery where you had a sharp decline and then you'd have a sharp recovery. Most people are thinking that it's going to look more like a U. The question is how big of a trough the U has. There are some that are saying we may be looking at something that is more shaped like a W, where you've got the drop, then a rise, then another drop, and then another rise. Time is going to tell. And we certainly hope the market volatility does not persist like it did during the Great Depression. When you look at that chart, you see a lot of blue above that zero line for a protracted period of time. If we get into a situation like that, it's going to be very difficult, and we're going to have a lot of decisions to make going forward. And probably the last piece is, as states start to reopen, what's going to happen in terms of a resurgence in terms of COVID-19 cases? Is it going to become a problem? And so with that, Nina, I'll turn it over to you.
Great. Thank you, Jim. So with that context, what we want to focus on now is what strategies, what ideas can you possibly implement in your communities to move yourself forward? We talk about a transition plan. That's the term that my organization is using. Whether you call it a transition plan or a reopening plan, I know many of us are focused on what does the next 3 months look like, potentially what does the next 6 months look like. And today, from three different communities, we're going to talk about some ideas on how you can focus on really two areas. What are you prioritizing? And we all know it comes down to money, but also programs and projects. And then also not forgetting the people part of this as well. And Austin's going to talk about some great things that they did in Lone Tree with regards to empowering their people. And so when it comes to the budget situations and the financial struggles that I think a lot of our communities are facing right now, we always get a wide range of responses. These are just some things that I think we tend to jump to first. I wouldn't necessarily say they're easy because they're challenging for an organization, and they certainly do hurt to implement. But these are some of the common things that we think about that can realistically maybe solve our problem for the short term. But as Jim just talked about, what we really need to be focusing on is what are some long-term strategic thoughts and ideas, because this isn't just going to be a short-term situation. And so we have here some questions that might be helpful for you to be asking yourself, for you to be asking your department, but kind of rethinking things a little bit, not necessarily just focus on cutting where you can. You know, a lot of us have had to transition to working from home. You potentially have some services where you were able to move them online so you didn't require face-to-face interaction. Have you reassigned people? Have you redeployed people? And what's working well? Instead of trying to just jump back, let's say, in 3 to 6 months to what you were doing in January and February, what has worked well in this transition that you might want to keep? You know, do you have a service that you were providing that really didn't provide a heck of a lot of value and might not be worth bringing back? And I will note here, we're really not going to get into the nitty-gritty of going through a kind of a budget evaluation. But in Pueblo West, we do use the Resource X tools. Right now they have out, I think, a fiscal health scenario tool. We use their priority-based budgeting every year to do our budgeting. As a small organization, our general fund budget is $9 million. We have 120 employees. We're small. And I like to say we're too lean and we're very nice. Not lean and mean. And, you know, for us, with such a tight budget, priority-based budgeting has really helped us make sure that every dollar we spend goes to something that's valuable. So I do recommend working with them if you never have. Some other questions to ask yourself, kind of more strategic, are, you know, what programs and projects don't work with social distancing, because that's probably here to stay for a while. And something that, at least in my organization, not all of my employees necessarily thought of is, you know, thinking about the economic recovery. Not just cutting the budget, not just thinking about, you know, youth sports and the programs that you provide, but what can help with an economic recovery in your community? And how can you leverage the fact that construction really hasn't stopped? And it might be different in your community or in your state. At least in Colorado, construction was deemed an essential business. So construction continues. We have private developers that we're working with on economic development projects that we've been meeting with in the last few weeks because they keep building and they want to work with us, right? So even thinking about those things in a time when we're challenged on our most basic items. So I wanted to provide some examples of how we're implementing these questions, how we're implementing these ideas in Pueblo West. One is we need a new administration building. Our building was destroyed last year, and we're leasing space from someone right now. We were right in the middle of designing a new building when the pandemic hit. And so we're actually rethinking our design and the need for space. If we offered permanently telecommuting as an option, do we really need that much space in the building? We can potentially save millions of dollars if we were just to offer telecommuting as a long-term solution. We have moved to online payments for some of our services that weren't available online. So realistically, we might not need as many people at our front desk to do face-to-face interaction. We also currently have customer service in 3 different locations across our community. We're using this time right now. In fact, we've used the last few weeks. I've charged our departments and their employees to come up with ideas on how could we centralize that. So when we reopen face-to-face, we're not just reopening the same thing. We're actually going to implement improvements when we get to that point. So those are some things that we're doing in Pueblo West. But Jim's going to dive a little bit more into another big part of kind of the money, the programs, the projects, financing. So Jim?
Thank you, Nina. So when you look at your finances, and one of the areas that when you see market volatility and, you know, downturns in the economy, recessions, et cetera, one of the first things that you'll note is that your investment returns just drop to the floor. And they, you know, what used to be a relatively decent revenue stream disappears. Right now, when you look at short-term interest rates and money markets and pooled funds, your returns on those investments are going to start approaching zero. Right now, the average money market is paying probably about 0.1%, which, you know, basically it's free money for the bank to hold currently. So how do you hedge your bets? Well, first and foremost, what you want to make sure that you've got a good handle is your cash flow, your ebbs and flows of cash that you have on hand. And you need to understand also what the needs on that cache are going to be. And really what you're trying to determine is you're trying to determine whether you have funds that you can invest for a longer period of time that you're not necessarily going to need for cash flow purposes. The last thing you want to do with investments is put yourself in a position where you have to actually go out and borrow money, which is counterintuitive, to make payroll. So you need to have liquid assets that you can get at, and through a cash flow forecast, you can see where your cash is ebbing and flowing and then determine how much money that you can invest on a longer term. What this allows you to do is it allows you to go longer out on the yield curve so that you can preserve some of that investment revenue that's coming into your municipality. But again, it's very important to know what cash you can invest for a longer period of time versus what you need to keep very liquid that you can use to make sure you can make your payroll and make your bills, et cetera. So then, you know, once you've got that kind of cash flow set up, you're going to want to look and review or modify any of your policies regarding investments so that you're not necessarily in a position where you're doing something outside of your investment policy, and you want to make sure that you're up to date with what you can and cannot do on an investment strategy. So you've got your investments kind of looked at and in a position. Now it's time to really, the rubber meeting the road is to look at your revenues and what's the impact of this pandemic going to be on revenues. We know that the majority of the country was shut down for a period of time, anywhere from 30 to what could be 4 months, depending upon where you are. That's going to have an impact on your revenues. For jurisdictions that rely on some sales tax revenue, that is going to have a dramatic impact because basically we closed the economy for a period of time, and while all sales taxes aren't going to disappear, there's going to be a hit. And the longer that we're taking that hit, the more impact there's going to be on your revenues. Here in Colorado, they're talking about billions of dollars of shortfalls for the next fiscal year. From the state perspective, a lot of that money trickles down to the local school districts and municipalities. So there's a loss of revenue that's going to flow from the state down to the local jurisdictions. In Colorado, we also have a situation where a lot of jurisdictions have local sales taxes. They're going to take a hit. I think the key is to look at what's the hit going to be. A month of maybe 50% revenues, not so bad. 2 months, still maybe not that horrible, but if it stretches out to 3 or 4 or 5 months where you've got reduced tax revenues, it's going to impact your ability to not only continue your operations, but then also be in a position where you can make your debt payments. And so it's a look at how steep and how long of a drop we are going to have in our revenue streams. If you're a tourism-based community, you're going to have an impact that could be a little bit longer as we go into the summer season where you're not going to see some of those tourism dollars because people are going to be wary. The sales taxes obviously are going to take a hit. Lodging taxes could take a hit. The longer we stay somewhat shut down, the harder it's also going to be to have the property tax revenue stream continue to move forward. So that could have an impact. So what does this all mean? Well, key is to make sure that you have a pretty good revenue forecast in terms of looking at how your revenues are going to be so that you can, A, make sure that you continue to do the operations that you need to do, but then also look at your debt payments. Are you going to be able to make your payments without having to tap into either reserves or debt service reserve funds? What's going to happen in the future? If you have to tap into your debt service reserve funds today, are you going to be able to make your payment tomorrow? And then as you get into some of those nuances with your debt, you've got some reporting requirements that you're going to have to look at. You don't have to report until you actually know you're going to miss a payment, but it's one of those situations where what do you know and when did you know it, and it's time to let the market know that you're actually going to have an issue. Nobody ever wants to have to put a material event notice out saying that they're going to miss a payment because that's something that obviously the market's will frown upon. So then that gets you into, well, what are some of the things that you can do in terms of your debt that's outstanding? Obviously, we've seen interest rates drop rather significantly. They dropped and then they rose, but we're basically in a situation where we've moved the interest rate environment back to where it was about January, early February, which was remarkably low. It dropped very significantly at the end of February and the beginning of March, and now we've seen it kind of resurge, and there's some significant volatility in terms of where rates are. So you have a number of options out there. If you're going to miss a debt payment, or you're in a situation where you're not going to make your payments, or you don't have enough money to make a full payment, you have options to look at with where interest rates are to refund or restructure your debt. You can do that in a number of manners. You can't necessarily do an advance refunding on a tax-exempt basis anymore because that disappeared with the last tax reform bill, but there are a number of other mechanisms that you could look at. We've seen taxable advance refundings that work, Cinderella bonds, which a Cinderella bond is basically a taxable issue that then at a date in the future converts to a tax-exempt. Why they call it Cinderella, I'm not really sure, but because it's basically turning into the prince after you've been, you know, the pumpkin along the way, it's backwards. But the concept is there that at some point in the future, you've got the conversion back to a tax exempt. Perhaps you're in a situation where you can do a current refunding, that you can restructure debt. Obviously, you never want to be in a position where you're looking to restructure your debt if you don't need to. If you don't need to push payments out into the future, that's the better solution. The key is that when you start looking at these options or you're being presented options for refunding and saving money is to really know what your options are and understand what the benefits are today versus what the benefits might be in the future. I'd love to sit here and tell you what's going to happen with the markets. That's kind of the million-dollar or billion-dollar question that's always out there. When you look at that graph in terms of the volatility of weekly rates, they're up one week, they're down the next week. We've seen the seesaw, and it seems to be that we're on the old lather, rinse, repeat kind of cycle when it comes to interest rates. There has been some signs that the interest rate market is opening itself back up and stabilizing. I read one quote today from BlackRock that basically indicated that the current market weakness is characterized more as a liquidity issue versus any other type of issue. And that's just simply that we're in a position where cash is king right now. People are nervous. Banks are not loose with their money right now. They're holding on to the cash because we just don't know what's going to happen. When it comes to the markets and the volatility that I talked about, there's still money out there that needs to be invested, and the higher your credit, the better you're doing out in the marketplace. You're still seeing competitive sales and negotiated placements where you're seeing very competitive interest rates that are you know right where the market should be, but you're also seeing some of the lesser credits when you drop into the A's and then the B's where it's hard to find the capital. So the higher your rating, the more likely you're going to be able to be out in the market borrowing money. The markets have been pretty favorable towards general obligation debt. Tax-backed debt has been favorable to revenue-type debt that is for an essential purpose like a utility where you've got a revenue stream that's well-established. The areas where the market has been a little less open to is when you're looking at sales tax-backed revenue bonds because we've had this disruption. We don't know how long this disruption is going to occur, or annual appropriation-type bonds. So yeah, we've seen the market move it's still an attractive market to be out in if you need to look at or have the opportunity to refund debt, or if you're in a position where you have to restructure debt. Just a couple of comments on the market in terms of one of the big benchmarks that we look at is, it's always what's the muni bond to the 10-year treasury, and we've seen that ratio be as low as 80%, and recently I think the highest that I saw or that I recollect, and I don't look at it every day, was it was 268% of the 10-year treasury. When you're up that high, and I believe today it was at 192, it's dropped back significantly. Muni bonds are attractive to investors because they're making a lot of money on them. It's not good for the person issuing the debt because the interest rates are higher than they probably should be. What's going to happen is the 10-year treasury is probably going to increase over time, not necessarily have the position where interest rates are going to drop significantly more. I think when you look at the rating agencies, they've looked pretty much across the board that there is a negative outlook on all facets of government. Airports are remarkably hit right now. Healthcare facilities are remarkably hit. And so, you know, just kind of summarizing, there's bargains out there in terms of issuing debt right now. You just have to find them. And it may not be a traditional way that you look at issuing your debt, but there is still a market out there, and the market is functioning. It was kind of shut down for a week, 10 days, but it is functioning, and it's fairly efficient at this point. But we've got to kind of reconcile the interest rates a little bit and free up some of the capital that's sitting on the sidelines. And when it comes to looking and freeing up capital, I'm going to turn it over to Kenny to talk about City of Baraboo.
Thank you, Jim. Let me get to my slide. So, as Jim had mentioned, he anticipates 40% of the small businesses are going to miss their rent for May. City of Baraboo anticipated that. Our city, it's fairly small. It's only 12,140 people. It's located in central Wisconsin, but we have a large, thriving downtown square with lots of restaurants, retail shops, a historical theater and whatnot, and we have lots of tourists. So tourism dollars and sales tax are very important to Baraboo, and we want to make sure that we didn't lose all of our businesses because of the pandemic. None of us know that any of these businesses will bounce back. What we've witnessed in our city are restaurants that have completely closed. They didn't say they were permanently closed. They just said closed for COVID, and we don't know if they're going to bounce back. If these businesses do not come back when this pandemic is over, we expect that our revenues would stay stagnant or be reduced for a much longer period of time than if they were able to stay open. So our problem that we discovered is, how do we prevent the loss of our small businesses who are financially affected by COVID-19. And we had to think outside of the box. We had to put our own city's capital to work in order to make sure our businesses thrive and are ready to bounce back. So we came up with the idea to offer an emergency assistance fund small business loan program. So essentially, what are the features of the emergency assistance fund small business loan program? We were able to tap into some available money we had. We tapped into our tax improvement district where we had $100,000 of available funds that were not earmarked for a particular project. We also found $150,000 in one of our economic development funds that was not currently earmarked for a particular project. So there we had $250,000 of unused money that we wanted to use to help our small businesses thrive as we're going through COVID. So the small business loan program is targeted to for-profit businesses. It would essentially be a $5,000 loan available to for-profit City of Baraboo businesses with 25 employees or less, and they've been financially affected by COVID-19. Now, we're not asking the businesses to prove that they've been financially affected. We assume if they're going to be applying for our loan, they have been affected. Now, any business can apply as long as they're under 25 employees and located within City of Baraboo. But the business must be current with the city's payments, for example, tax payments or water bills, whatnot, and they must not currently be in bankruptcy. The loan, the $5,000, would be due July 15, 2021. We're offering 0% interest between now and December 31, 2020, and 2% interest from January 1, 2021 through July 15, 2021. And we hope, you know, 14 months from now, our businesses would be able to recover and be able to pay that $5,000 back. Now, right now, we've received, since this program has been in force for about a week and a half, we received 15 applications, and we've already approved 14 of them. We are having a very fast, streamlined system. It's completely online, where the companies can apply online, submit their paperwork, and the documentation required are the 2019 business income tax return, their current balance sheet, their income statement as of March 1st, which is the date that our mayor declared an emergency declaration for the city, and a W-3 to document their employees. They're also given funding priority if they commit to retaining employees and jobs during the duration. The business owners sign a promissory note. We decided not to make it too restrictive. We didn't want to scare the businesses off by putting a lien on their property or whatnot. So the promissory note is the only thing that we're requiring. And it's a fast turnaround. As I mentioned, we can probably turn these loans around in about a week. So we're very happy about that. What can they use the money for? Our guidelines say that you can use the loan for mortgage payments, rent payments, insurance, utilities, payroll, and any other current operating expenses for your business. So as I mentioned, our city, we were able to tap into TID money, Tax Improvement District monies, to fund this program. So here are a couple of other ideas for you to think about to where you can find some money to help tap into these funds to help your small businesses. So in addition to the economic development funds, what about foregoing capital projects for a year and redirect that money to a business improvement program? If you really want to forego those projects, hopefully they're not mission critical, maybe a street improvement could be pushed back a year in order to redirect that to the program longer term. Or maybe you can use room or bed tax revenue in order to fund your program. As I mentioned at the beginning of my presentation, these were for for-profit businesses. When we presented that concept to council, they loved the idea. They approved it at the same meeting I presented it, but they also asked us, what about nonprofits? So now we are on a mission to create a similar program for nonprofits. It's going to be on our agenda on Tuesday next week with a few more restrictions because we want to avoid having to participate in companies that deal primarily with a particular religious group or other specialty group. But that will be online as well, and we'll have that up hopefully next week. So if you have any other questions about how to tap into that funds to help your small businesses stay in business, you can go ahead and go to our website, it's cityofbaraboo.com, and hopefully all your questions will be answered. That's it for me. Back to you, Jim.
And actually, this is Austin here. I'm going to go ahead and pick up the next slide. So we talked a little bit about the financial situation and the obvious needs for our organizations to adapt. But we also wanted to talk a little bit about our organizations ourselves and giving our people the flexibility to experiment, try new things, come up with amazing programs like the program that Kenny's City came up with. And that really comes down to how are we communicating with our staffs and how are we supporting experimentation to make that happen. And, you know, we don't have to be we all know this, you know, communication is really critical within our organizations. And really rephrasing and rethinking how we're communicating the crisis to our staffs and how we're encouraging our staff to communicate with each other about how we navigate the crisis can really make a big impact you know, talking about the I shoulds or the I'm too busy to try new things or we're just going to keep trying the same old thing over and over again, that's really not going to work in this new reality. And so really thinking about how we can communicate with our words, putting deadlines on innovating and really encouraging people to think outside the box, encouraging them to think adaptively is something that is really helpful and necessary as we encourage our staffs to try new things. You know, time to experiment. Let's get inside that box and try to break out of the box while getting in the box. I guess that's a cute representation of that picture. But getting into what we're doing in the City of Lone Tree. So what we've done is we've taken our staff. A lot of folks aren't doing the same thing they were doing 6 months ago, day to day. And their job description 6 months ago doesn't really work for what the current reality and our changing community needs. And so what we've done is we've actually reorganized our staffs temporarily around different recovery initiative areas. And what we're doing there is we've actually reallocated staff time for some folks. They're still doing some of their job that they did before, and they're just reorienting some of their time into these initiatives. While other folks, like, for example, we have an arts center in our town that's currently shut down because of the pandemic. And those folks, you know, their job day to day, they don't have a center to run. And so we're able to repurpose that talent, repurpose those people into helping us with what our city really needs right now. And the way we've broken that down is through our these different recovery initiative areas. So the first one is our core city services. So these are folks where their jobs aren't changing much day to day, or they're just doing the same job, but they have to adapt it for COVID. So this is looking at our police departments, a lot of the work our public works department does. And so really allowing them, you know, we want to include them in this as well because we also want to encourage them to think differently about the services that they're providing. Our next recovery initiative is our public health initiative. And so these are the folks that are working with our health departments. We have a Tri-County Health Department is our health department within the Denver Metro that we're working with. And they're also coordinating health information, really working closely with our communications folks to make sure that we're communicating what's happening, and especially now that we're leaving our stay-at-home orders from the state and entering safer at home is what we're calling in Colorado, where places are starting to reopen, really helping us monitor what the public health impacts of that are and how we can communicate out different initiatives. Public safety, so this is looking at, you know, partly our police departments, but also other ways that we can promote safety in the community, monitoring the different types of crime or domestic violence situations that are changing now that people are staying at home more, what different things are happening. And the next one that we have is our community connection well-being group. So this initiative, what these staff members are focusing on is the community and getting support out to our essential workers. They're helping bring people's spirits up, and they're also organizing a lot of the passion that our residents have to give back. Oh, sorry, getting messages that my mic's going in and out, so I'll try to, hopefully that helps a little bit. So with our community connection and well-being group, what they're doing is they're really focusing on helping our local community, our local residents, empowering them to give back and come up with projects as well. Our economic resilience and recovery group, these are the folks that are helping out our business community and really building up that network. And then we have a communications group, which is bringing everything together. So we took our staff, and I should mention as well, those were all interdepartmental groups. So there were people from all across the organization, all sorts of different departments that are coming together under those initiatives and working in different ways. And what they've been able to do is come up with some really great initiatives, and these are just a few examples of what they've come up with and what they've been able to do for the community. One of them being the Lone Tree Mask Making Project, which is helping connect residents to essential businesses that needed masks, and helping get materials out to folks that wanted to make those so that they were able to contribute in that way without leaving their homes. Lone Tree Feeds is a really great example of a program that they came up with to fundraise to support our local restaurants while also providing food to frontline workers. So we raised about $30,000 for that initiative that is also supporting local businesses. Lone Tree Thanks, which is a program to allow community members to send notes and creative messages to essential frontline workers. Lone Tree Eats was a way for us to reach out to our business community, finding restaurants and other food businesses that were doing takeout and delivery options and really promoting those on a citywide level, and also engaging residents and getting them to share on social media what they're up to. Our Community Champions Initiative, so that's looking at recognizing the folks in our neighborhoods that are doing amazing work. And so our staff is out looking for residents that are helping their neighbor with groceries, or the kids that are out chalking the sidewalks and really spotlighting them in the community to thank them for everything they're doing in their neighborhoods. And then Lone Tree Works is another example where what we're doing is we're building a network of businesses that are doing new and innovative things and promoting those across the city, so that they can, A, you know, build up their traffic, but also create a network of businesses so that they can share ideas with each other, so that if one business comes up with a really great way to deliver services online, other businesses can partner with them to make awesome things happen. So some of the keys to our success and continued improvement is that, you know, we're really looking to empower our staff to think outside of their traditional roles, and that comes through our regular all organization meetings. We call them all hands meetings. The work through they're doing with the initiatives, and those check-ins with their normal department heads to make sure that we're really empowering and trying to get them to think differently. Harnessing community member enthusiasm, I mentioned this. So this really came out from a lot of residents wanting to give back. They want to do good, but we're also telling them to stay home. And it's a really difficult problem or a difficult crisis for the communities to go through when you have people that want to give back, they want to help, but we're also telling them to stay away. And so finding out how we can harness that enthusiasm while people are out there in their homes has been a really great key to our success and has really helped build our community to be stronger. Redirecting passions instead of shutting down ideas. You know, when you let your staff loose to come up with great ideas, sometimes what you get back isn't sometimes it's not workable, or sometimes it doesn't work with other things that are going on. And so instead of just shutting out down ideas and moving on, it really helps to redirect those passions so that that enthusiasm is not lost and they're able to contribute that passion and that energy to other projects. Watching what other cities and organizations are doing, you know, local government is really unique and awesome, and one of the reasons I really love it is because we get a copy from each other, we get to talk to each other, there's no trade secrets that people have to worry about hiding, and so really helping out with other cities that are reaching out, but also us being able to reach out to other cities and learn from each other is really valuable and important. And then new communication tools are opportunities for transparency, and the example of this for us has been the use of Microsoft Teams. You might have Slack or other messaging apps in your office. Well, all those recovery initiatives that I talked about, the chats for all of those initiatives are public and open to anyone within the organization. And so people from throughout the organization are able to look into the work that all of those groups are doing. And if they have something to contribute for a particular project, or they have an idea, or they have a connection that they can make between two of the groups, they're able to do that because our communication streams are transparent. And with that, I'll go ahead and hand it back to the moderator for questions. Thanks.
Thank you. At this time, we'll open it up for audience questions. We already have several of them in the queue. Just a reminder, to enter your questions through the web conference system, simply type into the chat box located on the left of your screen, and then be sure to hit the send button. And I'm going to go ahead and read the first question. Some suggest that the time to borrow is when interest rates are low, and then follow-up question is it time to refinance loans that are at higher rates?
This is Jim Mann from Ehlers. When it comes to borrowing money, definitely when interest rates are low, you borrow as much as you can for as long as you can. When interest rates are high, you borrow as little as possible for as short amount of time as you possibly can. The problem when you get into borrowing money when interest rates are low is typically when interest rates are low is the least optimal time for the tax-paying public and rate-paying public to be paying that debt back. So it really becomes a political discussion of whether now is the right time to extend yourself and be in a position where maybe some of your taxpayers or your ratepayers aren't going to be able to pay back that debt or afford to do it. So it's a tough one. Yes, when interest rates are low, borrow money. And you know, kind of the follow-up is now the time to refinance loans? Short answer is yes. Long answer gets into the nuances of when is your debt callable? Do you want to do it in advance of the call date? You know, what is your savings level? You know, typically when you're looking at saving dollars through a refinance product, you want to make it worth your while. There's time and effort that goes into doing a refunding, and it should make sense for you as an individual municipality that it's enough dollars saved to work. I mean, just as an example, I'm working with a county that's looking at a project that a refunding of another obligation will free up capital that will help them pay for that project. We have been looking at the refunding for quite some time now, and it's finally at a level where it makes sense to do a taxable advance refunding on the deal. And it will save enough dollars to make a significant dent in this other project that they have to work on. 6 months ago, it didn't make sense to do a taxable advance refunding on the deal because the savings was just not great enough, and if we waited to do a current refunding, it would have produced a much greater savings. Now the savings has gotten to a threshold that it certainly makes sense. So it's a balancing act, and you certainly want to know when you're looking at refunding or refinancing, you want to know all your options, and you want to look at is now the best time. And, you know, I'm a municipal advisor, work for Ehlers. I would always say that you should use municipal advisors to look at refunding transactions so that you've got an independent viewpoint, somebody that has a fiduciary responsibility to you, the issuer, as to whether it's a good idea to do that refunding.
Thank you. And your next question, how are the markets looking at lending for private development?
Well, I would certainly say that, and this isn't necessarily an area that I am involved in because I do municipal finance, but there is still capital out there and it's being lended. I would certainly assume that it's a much tighter market now than it was previously. And I think if you're looking at economic development that would be speculative, it's probably a little harder to get over that threshold to get that lending product out there.
We have another question that came in. Due to this unprecedented crisis, can there be some kind of waiver in meeting the debt service ratio requirement, at least for 1 year, fiscal year 2021? If not, what is the consequence, if any, of not meeting the ratio?
Well, I'd love to wave a magic wand and say everything gets put on hold for a year. I think that would solve a lot of our problems, but unfortunately, that's not the way it works. Because if you've issued revenue debt, you have many times you'll have a debt service covenant ratio that you've got to meet. Because that is a covenant, you're in a position that it can't be waived. Maybe you could go back to the bondholders and ask for it to be waived. However, you're really in a position where you're going to have to notify the market that you are not going to meet your debt service coverage ratios. What does that mean? Well, that's a technical default. That's not a material default. You've still made your bond payment. The bondholders still got paid. You've just noticed that you didn't hit your 125 coverage or 150 coverage or 110 coverage. Whatever that covenant may have been, you didn't hit it, but you were still able to pay your debt payment. What's the market going to look at doing that? It's hard to say at this point simply because we haven't gotten there. But I think there's going to be a general understanding that there are going to be situations where communities are not going to meet coverage requirements and they are going to have some technical defaults. There is already, I think by last count, there's a handful of notifications that have gone out on the municipal market that say that they're not going to meet a debt payment. Obviously, those are going to be fewer and farther between. than technical defaults, but they're going to be out there. It's going to be an impact, but it shouldn't be as significant. We're really dealing with something unprecedented right now in terms of the debt markets and the capital markets associated, and it's an unknown at this point, and everybody really is in the same boat. If you know, most municipalities are not over leveraged. They have some leverage, but they're not over leveraged. And I would, you know, this is my opinion and my opinion only. I think those technical defaults are going to be fewer and farther between, and I wouldn't necessarily be concerned significantly if you have to file one, as long as you're still making your debt payments, that you had a technical default where you didn't make coverage.
Thank you. And moving on to our next question, some states' constitutions do not allow bankruptcy, but locals can have in some states. If locals go bankrupt, isn't it an opportunity to renegotiate contracts like retirement obligation?
I think this is a state by state. I'm not familiar with every state's rules and regulations regarding municipal bankruptcy, but while it could be an opportunity, there's an impact to that opportunity. If you're filing bankruptcy, there's going to be an impact on the broader capital markets in terms of the municipal bond market. Would it give you an opportunity to renegotiate some of those contracts and retirement benefits? Perhaps. That's a question that's probably above my pay grade at this point.
And it looks like we have one last question in the queue, but we do have some time, so participants, feel free to take advantage of this opportunity to submit your questions now. This next question, for small communities and local governments, what are the options for securing federal funds that are being directed to larger governments to make up for lost revenues and support managing through COVID?
Make a lot of noise. I think, you know, the difficulty is that, and we saw this with the PPP loans that were gobbled up by much larger businesses than we all would consider a small business. And I think that's, you know, and that's why, like, the city of Baraboo and a number of other communities out here in Colorado have established small business programs to help up small businesses. You kind of get lost in the shuffle if you're small. ICMA, not to pick on you, I think, but a small community definition for ICMA is something less than 25,000. And that's still a pretty large community compared to a lot of the municipalities out there. And so the smaller you are, the harder it is to get at that money. I think, you know, the only way to really get at it is to rattle some sabers and really make a lot of noise.
Yeah, and this is Nina. I was just going to add, you know, I think there are a lot of folks lobbying on local government's behalf right now to try to get more support. But the reality probably looks like, at least for the time being, that, like I like to say, there's no one really coming to save us. And so I think it really is on us. We have to kind of figure it out ourselves. I don't necessarily think that there is that kind of relief coming from the Fed, or potentially, I don't know, it depends what state you're in, but even from Colorado, you know, a community our size is even struggling to get resources from at our state level. So that's just kind of the reality I think most of us are living in right now.
And we have had a couple more questions that were submitted, so I'll go ahead and ask the next one. How do TIF, TID funds in Wisconsin, how are they able to be spent outside of district boundaries?
The TID that we use for our loan, it was available because we had already loaned it out to a developer that was making a project, and he paid it back. So according to Wisconsin law, once the amount is paid back, it could be used for any economic development project throughout the city. It doesn't have to stay in that particular TID district. I don't know if that's the same throughout the United States, but that is what's the rule in Wisconsin.
And Kenny, I'll just add to that. When a tax increment district in Wisconsin contributes money to an economic development fund, so to speak, once that money goes out in the world, it comes back and it becomes a revolving source of funds. I think it's the city of Oshkosh amended a pair of tax increment districts to revenue share to do something similar. I don't have all the details of that revenue sharing, but there are mechanisms that you can use tax increment funds to help outside the boundaries of the direct boundaries of a district.
Another question, how many businesses have taken advantage of the loans for the city of Baraboo?
So far, we've received 15 applications, and we've approved 14 so far. I'm approving at least five, it seems like five a day, but that wouldn't add up to 15, but at least five new ones are coming in. They're getting into the queue. So I would think, you know, with $250,000 at $5,000 apiece, we may reach 40 businesses very quickly. And then with our city council wanting us to tap into nonprofits, we're going to hit that amount much more quickly. But we do have more money left in one of our economic development funds. If we've maxed out, we could go back to council and ask for another $100,000. So that's something in our back pocket that we're waiting to see if this program is successful in being taken advantage of by our small businesses.
A comment came in from a participant, interesting idea to delay CIP projects.
Well, that's the hard and fast line. I mean, you really have to kind of bite the bullet. Street projects, roof repairs, if you can delay your roof for a year to keep your businesses here, that could keep you alive for 10 to 20 years in the future. What's more important right now? And our thought as a city, it's more important to try to keep those businesses afloat. So we're willing to bite the bullet and, you know, take the heat and not have that road improved or not have that air conditioning system replaced for a year. And hopefully we'll still have those funds next year because the businesses are still here to help pay for that.
We have another comment that's come in from a participant. According to GFOA, local governments on average only spend 2% of their IT budgets on cybersecurity. The current threat landscape demonstrates that local governments continue to be a target of threat actors. Ransomware continues to plague local governments. Seems like we should still prioritize increased cybersecurity spending. Your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. This is Nina. That's a great point. And I think kind of going back to earlier in the presentation, it's really kind of on you to prioritize how have your needs and therefore your spending needs to drastically change. Right? We've blown through our IT budget because we have so many people telecommuting right now. And that's something that we're considering for 2021. Do we need to adjust maybe our Parks and Rec programming, because we do a lot of in-person programming that's not a reality, and reprogram it to something else, right? And I think that's kind of what we're looking at when we look at the next 3, 6, 12 months is, you know, this has fundamentally changed probably how our community and how our organization works and what services we're able to provide. So things like that, should we be, you know, spending more on cybersecurity and less on something else, is really, really important given our limited resources.
Let me just add to that from the finance guy's perspective. Your cybersecurity is extremely important when it comes to bond transactions, because during a bond transaction, there's a lot of money that gets wired from place to place, and usually it goes through an iteration where it's going into your municipal accounts in some form or another. We had an instance a couple of years ago where the municipality's email server had been hacked and was being shadowed. And we caught, luckily and happily, and everyone cheered, and we were all happy smiling at the end of the day, faulty wire instructions that would have sent $10 million to a bank in Hong Kong. And once that money would have gone, it's gone, and there's no getting it back. So cybersecurity is extremely important, and the rating agencies, if you're a rated community, are going to ask questions about cybersecurity, because that is a real threat to your financial operations. And, you know, I'm not going to tell you you need to spend more money or less money, but it is an issue that you need to really be on top of.
And we have another question here. Is the loan given out to the small businesses accounted for within general fund or a special revenue fund?
You know, I'm sorry, I don't have a clear answer to that. All I can assume that our finance director is, she did was ask our council to use funds in the TID and in the economic development. And since it's a loan, it's going to come out of that fund. We have a separate fund for the TID and a separate fund for the Economic Development Fund. It gets loaned out, and then when it gets paid back, it goes back into that fund. So I would assume that would be under the category more of special revenue, considering it's not out of the general fund.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Do you think this economic disaster might lead to government consolidation and more regional government structures?
That's a tough question to answer. Don't know. That's a tough
question. Austin, do you have anything on that?
You know, I think for us in Lone Tree, we're pretty well ingrained within the Denver metro area, so we have a lot of regional agencies already that provide services. So for us, our Parks and Rec is all done through a special district that covers multiple cities. Our health department is through a multi-county jurisdiction. And what I'll say on our end, I can't speak to whether they're going to be more popular, but on our end, it's been a really great asset. I think being able to work together collaboratively is really valuable, and having that support network of other agencies has been really great over the course of this crisis. What I will say is it also does make things a little bit slower, and also in times where, during this crisis in particular, different agencies or different jurisdictions have different rules, especially around stay-at-home orders and things like that. That does get trickier. From a financial side, I'm not sure what makes more sense. I think that comes down to a long-term decision. But when it comes down to that short-term pandemic response, there's definitely been pluses and minuses.
Thank you. And Kenny, I think that comment in there about Quartzsite and Baraboo is for you.
It is. It is. We have a really large national park. It's the biggest national park in Wisconsin in the Baraboo area. It's called Devil's Lake, and it has some of the most beautiful quartzite you would ever want to see. So if you're in Wisconsin, come to Devil's Lake State Park.
Good to know. Moving on to our next question. As a percentage of expenses, what is considered an adequate general fund reserve during this pandemic? Our policy is 20% and may need to draw it down to 14% to help us get through this fiscal year.
That's a very good question. I think when you look at reserves, there are some metrics out there that, you know, GFOA will say one thing, the rating agencies say, you know, something else. They're somewhat similar. It really comes down to the volatility of your revenues in terms of the level of reserves that you should have. If you are a property tax-based revenue where the majority of your revenues are coming from property taxes, that percentage probably can be less than if you were a sales tax-based revenue-type organization. So when you talk about whether, you know, drawing down your reserves, I can tell you that the rating agencies never like you to draw down your reserves. What's the better choice now? Lay off a bunch of people, stop operations so that you don't draw down reserves, or use your reserves? Your reserves are there for a reason when emergencies occur. I would hope that as the rating agencies evaluate draws on reserves, that they are a little open to the idea that this is an extraordinary event and it's okay to draw those reserves down. The concern is going to be whether you draw those reserves down this year and then you're forced to draw down again next year. You're not going to know that answer until we get to next year, because we just, who knows how long this is going to go on. But you definitely, I think now's a perfect time to be putting those reserves to work. When we originally did this presentation for the Colorado City and County Management Association, we actually added a section after that about putting your capital to work, simply because that was a question that came up and it was a very good question. Now's not the time to be shy with your capital. Now's the time to use your capital. And Kenny in the city of Baraboo is a perfect example of using some of that capital to keep your local businesses afloat, because that's key going forward to returning to some sort of sense of normalcy.
Moving along to our next question for our presenters, as delaying CIP projects seem to be a budgeting tool default during this crisis, what about the hiring freeze and layoffs? What are you guys doing and your thoughts on this?
Here at the City of Baraboo, we have already had conversations about what we're going to do if this crisis continues. And it's unfortunate we have to consider hiring freezes and layoffs. What we've discovered is that the people who are currently on unemployment, some of them are making more money on unemployment than they are at some of their positions. So we are seriously considering some of the people we have on, we call it COVID leave, because they're technically staying at home per the governor's order, but still getting paid. We're seriously considering furloughing them and allowing them to take unemployment, because they'd actually make more money than they would stay on our payroll. So that is something we're definitely looking into. If this pandemic continues for the next month or so, we're going to start seriously looking at it around June when we start our budgetary process.
Yeah, we've been really fortunate in Pueblo West that we are not in a budget situation where we need to look at hiring freezes or layoffs. And one of kind of our themes in our region, I think, has been to try our best not to do that, because it's ultimately going to end up impacting the economic condition of your community and your long-term economic recovery if you as a local government are basically contributing to that. One of the other kind of tools or things that we're working on is, you know, between us and our libraries and our schools and our county, we're all getting together to try to figure out who kind of is in a worse budget situation than others. Unfortunately, our school district is going to be hit really, really hard, and they're really kind of the pride and joy of our community. So we're trying to figure out between five different local governments, some of whom are in a way worse budget situation than we are, how do we work together and maybe even support each other, whether that's financially or through changing our programs? How can we support each other kind of across local government lines?
Are any of you doing any retirement incentives as a cost savings method?
No, we're not.
Or not in laundry.
Mm-mm. Okay. That was our last question of the day. Presenters, thank you for that presentation. Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up?
I just say thank you so much for tuning in. I know for all those who are listening, this is a really challenging time. There's no right or wrong way, I think, to do this in a pandemic. None of us really know. We're all figuring it out together. So feel free to reach out to any one of us. And thank you for the work you're doing. A lot of respect out to all of you who are on this webinar today.
And with that, we must conclude today's webinar. A special thank you to our presenters and to everyone who joined us today. Please take a moment now to complete a brief evaluation of today's program by clicking the evaluation link to the left of your screen. Your comments and suggestions are important to us as we plan future events. You can also access the survey from your ICMA University dashboard by clicking on the program title once you're logged in. Thank you for your participation in today's webinar. We hope you will join us again soon. Today's program is Copyright 2020 by the International City County Management Association with all rights reserved. And this concludes today's program. You may now disconnect.